The upshot of that conversation is that that very day, my brother and I walked straight into John D. Rockefeller's private offices and were talking to his best friend. Well, that resulted in setting up a foundation in New York called the Alcoholics Foundation. And we were very optimistic that it would be filled soon with great riches to do all this good work. Missionaries, hospitals, books. It looked very easy. And these new Rockefeller contacts seemed very interesting. One went to Akron, made a survey of Dr. Bob's situation, came back with a glowing report, thought Mr. Rockefeller should give us $50,000 at once, open a rest home in Akron. We were in a state of tremendous enthusiasm and excitement, excepting the few conservative AAs who had begun to murmur, well, what all this business confuse us? Won't we be creating a professional class? But no, I brushed all that aside. The promoter element won out. The report went into Mr. John D. Rockefeller. And then and there, that man took a decision that saved this movement. His old friend Dick Richardson had brought him this glowing report about the alcoholic group in Akron, the one in New York, and its recommendation for money, with plenty to follow. And Mr. John D. Rockefeller Jr. read and reread the report. Finally, he looked up at his friend Dick and said, I am strangely affected by this report. It is a terribly interesting thing. But Dick, said he, aren't you afraid that money will spoil this thing? Isn't it the work of goodwill? One person carrying the message to the other? It's still small, but somehow it has tremendous promise. Dare we spoil it with money, Dick? No, said John D. Jr., I am not going to give any large sum of money to those people. I'm afraid I'll spoil it. Oh, what a blow that was to us alcoholics. Well, we worked on with some of his friends. We convinced him that we should have a little money, at least for a book. We create a foundation called the Alcoholic Foundation. Grandiose idea, it'd be kind of a little brother to that Rockefeller Foundation someday, you know. But nothing happened. We were given the best letter you can imagine to people of wealth, and we solicited money all during 1938. And all that summer, we didn't get 1 cent. So finally, the alcoholics in New York began to subscribe and put money in a little common pot so I could go to work on this book to be. Gone were our grandiose ideas of strings of hospitals and professional work. And so, after a great struggle, this society in 1939 produced a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. At that moment, our friends began to rally around us. There came our friend of religion, Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, favorably reviews the book. Soon comes Father Ed Dowling up here in the Sodality at St. Louis, who said its steps, the word-of-mouth program now enlarged into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, said, Father Ed, these steps are counterparts of our Ignatian exercises. And he recommended us to the Catholic world. My doctor, at risk to his reputation, had set his endorsement on that book. And then our friends really began to rally around. Came our friends of the press. Liberty Magazine gave us a great piece. And then in 1940, at one of the meetings held in this empty foundation with the friends of Mr. Rockefeller, we had word from Mr. Rockefeller for the first time since 1937. And he said he wanted to give this society a dinner and invite his friends. He invited a great number of wealthy people. We drunks thought our money troubles were surely now over. That room full of bankers could have produced $2 billion, we thought. Dr. Fosdick spoke. Another famous neurologist spoke. The alcoholics had something to say. We thought the great moment was here. When Nelson Rockefeller, representing his father, who was sick that night, got up and he said, "You know, this thing has deeply affected my father's life. It has engaged his interest as nothing else ever has. But, and gentlemen, my father is delighted that his friends could see the beginning of his great and promising work." But fortunately, continued Nelson Rockefeller, "this is a project that requires no money. It is a work of goodwill." And with that, $2 billion worth of bankers got up and walked right out the door. In the next year, a great decision was taken by the owner of a great American periodical. An editorial meeting was being held, probably in January 1941, an editorial meeting was being held by the Saturday Post people. They were considering whether they would print a piece about it. Most of the editors were against it, thought it would get us into trouble with medicine and religion, might turn out to be a cult. The owner of that magazine was present, Mr. Fox. And he said, "Gentlemen, I don't wish to influence your policy over much, but this time let me urge it on you. I myself have seen two of these miracles. I am deeply convinced there is something wonderful. I do wish you'd publish that piece." Well, the Post did. Jack Alexander wrote the feature article for the March 1941 issue. And then a little office we had in New York was flooded by thousands upon thousands of frantic inquiries from alcoholics, their wives, their friends, their employers, their churches, their doctors. That gave us lists of people in cities all over North America who we knew to be suffering. We mailed them our pamphlet. We drew attention to the book. From our established little groups, we directed travelers to them. And AA began to mushroom, began its phenomenal spread. It had taken 4 years to sober up 100 drunks and produce that book. That was 1939. By 1940, we had 800 members. By 1941, 2,000 members. Then comes the Post article, and we suddenly jump to 10,000 members in 1 year. The word going from alcoholic to alcoholic. One alcoholic talking to another. The press of the world saying, "People, this is good." So Alcoholics Anonymous completed its time of infamy. It was proved beyond any doubt that practically any alcoholic in his right mind who wished to get well badly enough could do so. The formula for recovery was now above ground and had begun to come into plain sight of the alcoholics of the world. As we entered this exciting, fearsome period of adolescence, we were beset with another terrific problem. You see, when the alcoholic is sobered up, he is by no means made into a saint overnight. He is still a very erratic person. So, these newly forming groups, some of them formed just by mail, we call them mail order groups in those days, began to write in about the terrible troubles they were having. Quarrels about money, quarrels about prestige, quarrels about clubhouses, panhandlers, panhandlers. Then the alcoholic ladies had begun to show up, and it was darkly supposed that we would be full of Little Red Riding Hoods and big bad wolves, and that might disintegrate. People began to come out of the asylum, and the conservative AA said, we can't mix this with lunacy. And people began to come out of the prison, and we began to have all sorts of organizational trouble. In other words, the forces that tend to divide all societies, having to do with prestige, with property, with authority, with sex, those forces which tend to rend all societies apart began to beat upon us with a terrible power. Neurotic people that we were. Now then, if the 12 steps would hold the individual in one piece and release him from his obsession, would the spirit of those 12 steps applied to our problem of living and working together hold us together as groups, and could we function? That was the great conundrum of the period of adolescence. Could this movement go on living and functioning as a movement? That was the point. Well, on those thousands of anvils of experience was beat out the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous, now stated in 12 points, like the steps itself. And the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous, strangers to our society, has many very singular features. Most societies of men say you may come in here under certain conditions. You pay so much. You agree to so-and-so. You sign it. Well, in the early days of AA, because we feared all sorts of strange people who might disrupt us, we had all sorts of membership rules. We talked about the pure alcoholic, the alcoholism without any complications. Of course, we get a big laugh out of that now, but we tried to, in our fear, to have a very exclusive class of people. There are even some who said they ought to come to the right side of the tracks, and, you know, all of those things. Today, all of that has changed. We now know that we can safely and gladly open our arms to the whole world and say to any alcoholic man and woman, we do not care who you are. We do not care what you've done. You can become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if you say so. And we cannot keep you away. All we old-timers shudder at those, old-timers shudder at membership rules we once had, which might have kept away some of our most beloved people. No, we of AA have found that the door of the court of last resort can never be closed to our brothers and sisters anywhere in the world, no matter who they are. Well, as time went on, we began to develop curious ideas about money. As a matter of fact, this decision by Mr. Rockefeller, strange as it was, had saved this society from a professional class and a property class. So, more experience confirmed how right he was. Today, for example, we say to the whole world, once you sober up alcoholics, they can well earn their own living. Yes, in fact, perhaps the average earning power of this society is twice as great as the average for America as a whole. It is probably true that our fellowship of 120,000 people will earn in personal income in the next 12 months $600 or $700 million. Just found money. Well, realizing that, we now say, why, of course, we have something to give society. So we never solicit money. We decline outside contributions. Our foundation in New York recently declined a foundation of $10,000 from a well-meaning person who had left that sum in her will. When news of that leaked out, our clipping services showed that periodicals and papers all over the world commented on this strange society of alcoholics. People who had always said, we have no troubles that money can't cure. And here was this strange society of Alcoholics Anonymous declining $10,000. Who ever heard of such a thing in this modern world? Then we had a great struggle about this question of professionalism. In the early days, we felt we would have to have older members subsidized somehow to carry this message. But now we know that there can be no such thing as professionalizing Alcoholics Anonymous. And from the very top to the very bottom of our society, nobody is paid by AA members to carry this message to another alcoholic. Not a soul. Why, yes, we have caretakers in our clubhouses. We pay them for being janitors. We have secretaries in our offices, the few we have, little information centers. We pay them for being secretaries. Am I paid by this movement? No, not at all. I once authored the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the textbook. For being the author of that book, I'm paid a royalty. So I can say to these drunks, every time you buy this book, drunks, I've got you for 50 cents a page. And that is my sole income from this work, which I earned as an author, but not as a therapist or as a mission. We have no professional work. Well, then there was this question of whether AA was to have a government. Most societies have to have some head or tail, somebody in the story. Well, it was very discouraging and disturbing for me to learn in the early early years of AA that drunks simply will not be governed. That is, not by other drunks. So today in AA, there is not one soul who has any personal authority over another alcoholic. We have some little service committees to do some chores. We may keep an office open in a large city so they can answer its mail and telephone. We have some trustees who issue some books and pamphlets, look after public relations, all that sort of thing. But not one of those people can or ever will have the slightest authority over this book. Just an authorization to serve, but never to trust. And each group of Alcoholics Anonymous may call itself an AA group so long as two or three alcoholics are gathered together for surprise. Even if they differ with the whole program, provided, of course, their behavior doesn't affect our society as a whole. Strange society, doesn't it? Now in America, we have a wonderful tradition. You and I love it, every bit of it. But in some respects, the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous is flying directly in the face of American tradition. Here in America, we love heroes. We are hero worshipers. Business is transacted on big names and big people. News is made on big people or big villains. Everything is done on the basis of personalities at the public level. We found that tradition was, for our purpose, far too unsafe. Moreover, we finally sensed that it might be a refreshing thing in this country if its citizens found among themselves a society whose members wish to have no personal prestige at the public level, a society willing to place principles before personality. We thought that might be a refreshing thing. And it was. And as a result of it, every newspaper reporter who visits an AA meeting sees at once that nobody has any personal angle here. Nobody can profit personally. So he becomes a convert to our idea. He writes wonderful publicity. AA has had millions of dollars of free publicity due to the fact, largely I think, that we do, at the public level, place principles ahead of personality. Then, too, that anonymity guards the person coming in. The skeleton isn't going to walk in the street. We have found, too, that it is of immense protective of value to this movement. At one time, we supposed that Alcoholics Anonymous ought to educate, ought to research, ought to try to do everything for the alcohol problem that there was to be done. But in late years, we have found that this society must needs confine itself to one single purpose, carrying that message to the alcoholic, face to face. And that's all. As individuals, yes, we can cooperate with outside enterprises, but we must not transfer the AA name to them. Oh, we're very much chained to that. And then we found, too, this anonymity has a deep spiritual significance. It is a token of our group and personal humility. I recall the time when we were trying to find a title for the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't a very popular title at first, and as we groups voted upon it and the other titles, it gradually rose in popularity. At first, I was very much for this name. And then there came to me a temptation. I thought to myself, suppose this book, when it is published, becomes an important adjunct to a movement. Why should that book be called Alcoholics Anonymous? Why shouldn't I sign that book? Why shouldn't we call it The Way Out by Bill Wilson, huh? Alcoholics Anonymous. I got so I didn't care too much for that. And then I thought to myself, well, in the outside world, practically all authors signed their books. The laborer is worthy of his hire. I think I should sign this book, having contributed so importantly to its preparation. And when I made this proposal to the little groups of that day, their eyes took on a look which I now quickly recognized. And the group conscience began speaking to me, and the group conscience said, Bill, you can't do this to us. You can't do this to us. That would make you a public figure. You might fall on your face. You might get swelled head. You might let us down. Those things could happen, couldn't they? Moreover, you'd set an example for every drunk who follow you to do the same thing. Isn't that what blew up the Washingtonian Society 100 years ago? Oh, yes, it's all right. All other authors do it. But, Bill, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is something different. AA works not because it is precisely like other societies. It works because it is different. No, said the group conscience to me, you can't do this to us. Aren't you the fellow who has sometimes said in these meetings that sometimes the good can be the enemy of the best? AA must have the best, for this is a quest for survival. So Alcoholics Anonymous at once. Years later, I sat in a projection room. March of Time had made a picture about AA. The vice president told me, this is to be shown to 12 million people. And as that picture unrolled, here was the book Alcoholics Anonymous, held up to public view 2 or 3 times, to the view of 12 million people who would see that picture. And across its page, it said, Alcoholics Anonymous, period. And I thought to myself, if that thing had been called the Bill Wilson Movement or the Way Out by Bill Wilson, would the march of time been showing that to 12 million people? No. We might not even be alive as a society. Thank God that I have paid the group conscience. So at long last, I found out that I was no longer a teacher of this society. I was its pupil. And our adolescence closed with the confirmation of these traditional principles at Cleveland, Ohio, in 1950, when some 7,000 of us gathered together, reviewed our 12 points of tradition, now stated definitely, and came to the conclusion that Alcoholics Anonymous was willing to commit its future to these principles, asking God that they keep us in unity for so long as He might need us. That was done at Cleveland last summer. And at that very moment, I think, AA stood on the threshold of its maturity. Of maturity. AA took its destiny by the hand. Now, during all this time, there was one other factor at work about which nothing had been said. How could AA best function? You see, those early meetings were just drunks and parlors. There weren't any dues, there weren't any fees. Well, there aren't any today, to be sure. But no money was needed. It was utterly simple. There weren't any committees, there weren't any founders. But even then, our wives were brewing coffee and making cake for those fellows feeling their way toward the light out front there. They performed a service that helped AA function. Then we moved into halls. Well, you had to have somebody pass the hat. Pretty soon you had to have a secretary to write a letter. A chairman to see the local newspaper, radio station, doctor, clergyman, or whatnot. Not people to govern that group, just people to do some chores so it could function. And so, the same situation grew up in large metropolitan areas. No one group or individual could assume to represent all AA in that area. Hundreds of people wished to reach us. They had to be able to get us on the phone. We had to make arrangements for affairs such as this. Chores had to be done so the area could function. We had to get rightly related to the hospital, to the people in the community. So we have little service offices in our large city. They don't cost much. Hire one or two people. But those services are vitally needed so that this society can function. Not a government, just a service that helps AA to function. So that my mission of late has been to bring this whole idea of service into its proper focus. And these services especially. Now you remember way back there in 1938, we organized this foundation at the center, which never got any money in it from the outside, except some very small contributions that allowed Dr. Bob and I $30 a week for 5 years. That's all the money this society ever had from the outside. The alcoholics who clubbed together to produce this book transferred their ownership of it to the foundation, so that our book is now owned by AA. Then when all those inquiries came in as a result of the Saturday Post piece, tens of thousands of us, AAs all over the country chipped in $1 a head a year to keep an office open in New York to answer those and to refer them to help. And then came a public relations problem. And then we had the question of relating ourselves to top-flight medical people. to clergymen and all of that sort of thing. Then there was this question of the loner at sea. All sorts of problems arose which had to be handled at some central point. Now I have invested about 12 years of my life in helping to supply those services which now cluster around our foundation in New York. So we are today seeing AA as three inheritances or legacies. The legacy of the 12 steps that enables the individual to recover. The legacy of the 12 traditions, which we trust will contain us in unity. And the legacy of service, which will enable this society to function down the years to come. And just before he passed away, Dr. Bob and I joined in the preparation of a little tract here called Our Third Legacy. Will you accept it? That is the legacy of service in general and of those headquarters services in New York, which we hope will help AA's function. And I will just read you in conclusion a couple of paragraphs and then your legacy of service. Here it is. This first paragraph deals with a bunch of suppositions. Supposing all these years we hadn't had these services. Suppose that no one had looked after these chores. That reads as follows. Suppose then all these years we had been without these services. Where would we be today minus the AA book and our standard literature, which now pours out of headquarters at the rate of, presently, 8 tons a month. Supposing our public relations had been left to thoughtless chance. Suppose no one had been assigned to encourage good publicity and discourage the bad. Incidentally, Fortune magazine carried a feature article on Alcoholics Anonymous last February. I suppose most of our members read that and said, well, that's very good. They wouldn't know that their headquarters had spent many, many hours with the editors of Fortune and the fellow who wrote that piece, so that it could carry our message well and truly. Now, supposing no accurate information about AA had been available, imagine our vital and delicate relations with medicine and religion left at potluck. Then, too, where would thousands of AAs be today? If the central office hadn't answered their frantic letters and referred them to help, in what shape would hundreds of distant groups now be if that office hadn't started them by mail or directed travelers to them? How could we have managed without a group directory? What about those foreign groups in 28 countries clamoring for translations, proved experience, and encouragement? Would we now be publishing the book at Oslo, Norway, and London, England? What of those lone members on high seas or in far corners of the earth? Those prisoners, those asylum inmates, those veterans in service or in hospital. Where might they be one day if we never had the grapevine, our mirror of AA life and principal form of written expression? How grateful we are for those secretaries, editors, and friendly trustees who have stood sentinel all these years over our principal affairs. Without all of those things, where would we be? You must have guessed it. We'd be nowhere, that's sure. So it is that by the steps we have recovered, by the traditions we have unified, and by our headquarters services, we have been able to function as a society. Now, last April witnessed a truly historic event, quite as important in its bearing as that summer day last year in which we confirmed the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Representatives of the AA movement from the states and provinces of North America met in New York to assume charge of our principal service. It meant that control of these things were passing from us who were older in AA to you who are younger. The conference is simple and did accept its legacy of service, which, in conclusion, I will read to you as Dr. Bob and I wrote it last fall. We, who are the older members of AA, bequeath to you who are younger these three legacies: the 12 steps of recovery, the 12 traditions, and now the general services of Alcoholics Anonymous. Two of these legacies have long been in your keeping. By the 12 steps, we have recovered. By the traditions, we are achieving a fine unity. Being someday perishable, Dr. Bob and I now wish to deliver to the members of AA their third legacy. Since 1938, we and our friends have held it in trust. This legacy is the general headquarters of AA, the foundation, the AA book, the grapevine, the general office. These are the principal services which have enabled our society to function and to grow. Acting on behalf of all, Dr. Bob and I ask that you, the members of AA, now assume guidance of these services and guard them well. The future growth, indeed the very survival of Alcoholics Anonymous, may one day depend on how prudently these arms of service are administered in the years to come. So now, my friends, I think that you see that the outline of our cathedral of spirit is taking its final form. On the great floor of that cathedral, we see inscribed our 12 steps of recovery. You and I have seen its side walls rise and know that they are now firmly buttressed by the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which shall contain us in unity for so long as God may need it. And now I am sure that you apprehend that the spire of our cathedral is being set in place. And you know that the name of that spire is service, a beacon to all those brothers who do not yet know. And may the symbolic finger of that spire of service ever point straight upward toward God. Last night, Bill told us of some of the early trials and tribulations that were undergone by those who were exerting an early effort on behalf of this society. He told us of the troubles in the production and the ultimate distribution of this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Had I been serving in this capacity last night, I might have had something to add. I might have had some angle to add as to how to help along on that score. Today, I have nothing to add. Most of us have heard part of this story that Bill has told us today. The vast majority of us have never had the opportunity, however, to hear it firsthand in a complete manner. All I can say today, and I want to do so on behalf of all members of AA in this audience, Bill, we appreciate it. Bill made frequent references in his talk this afternoon about his affectionate wife. Lovely wife, Lois. He didn't say anything about why she wasn't here. Bill was on a pretty heavy schedule. He came here from Denver, similar meeting to this. He's been through 2 days of this, just like I have and just like you have, and I might say 2 days is about enough for me. I've heard that same expression from others last night and today. Bill goes on from here to a similar meeting in Kansas City. Sent to one in Gulfport, I believe it is, and I know nothing about his itinerary from there on. Pretty strenuous program, schedule. Lord elected to stay at home, and wisely so, I think. I want Bill to know and to tell her that we all want to meet her sometime. A good gal like that who will stay, has that tenacious attitude that she has displayed and continuing on in that job at the department store. I know we'd all, good. I know it. I know we'd all like to meet her. Bill, I've asked you 2, 3, or 4 favors during the last 2 days, and I want to ask one more. That you, on your return, extend greetings from members of AA in Oklahoma, the Lord.
With great happiness, thank God.
Thank you. Now, all good things must end. As I told you a while ago, this is the concluding session of this 2-day affair. We trust that others will follow. I know the most of us are surprised at the size and the success of this, our original effort from the state of Oklahoma. And I know one Texan that's surprised. I'm not going to call any names, but I heard this man say last Thursday, Roy was saying something about the size the crowd anticipated. Put up pretty good sized figures. Texan says, no, you won't reach but half of that. Better be satisfied. You should be satisfied. Now, down in Texas, where we do things in a big way, he's a native Texan now, I'm quite sure. You know they do things big down in Texas? Because we've had 6 of these affairs down there. I believe he said 800 was their top. So I think we should be justly proud of the efforts of those who put on this affair. Let's tell our groups about it, those who missed it. Tell them what they missed. Urge the next opportunity they have to participate in such an affair as this that they drop whatever they're doing and put forth every effort to be in attendance. Again, I want to say we appreciate the speakers who have made this program possible. We do appreciate it. We hope you'll come back. Those of you who are out of state, come back to see us with every opportunity. As I say, all good things must close. We're going to close this meeting today, which also closes the convention in our customary manner, by rising and repeating in unison the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.